Everyone's a little closer on this one, but it's nice. Get a little more conversational. So tonight we are going to go back to the Book of Esther. That's what I was kind of working off of. Hope you're a little farther this time. I'm gonna take about 3 weeks to go through it, work on this. So. Yeah, to start off tonight, since it was a little while ago that we did this, I'm just going to do a little bit of a recap for the first few minutes here. The time frame for the Book of Esther is really probably was around 483 BC is when these times happened, about 500 years or so before Christ. And this was the first group of Jews had made their way back to Jerusalem to start rebuilding the nation and the city of the nation of Israel. Jerusalem is their capital. They will stay an occupied people for most of the next 500 years, being tossed around basically from the Persians to the Greeks and then to the Romans when Christ comes on the scene. And this was one of the first things we kind of looked at, and it's one to often think of. Some people stayed in Persia and others headed back to Jerusalem to start doing the rebuilding, Ezra and Nehemiah being two of them. And it's one of these things in life. What do you do? What do you do when persecution comes? Do you stay or do you go? Do you flee, or as they did in the first century church, and go start new churches, or you stay in Jerusalem and get persecuted? It really, at the end of the day, doesn't matter. Whatever you do, why you do stuff matters much more than what you do. What does what you do remind you of? What's that? Well, what? What entails, basically, I thought I heard it, a law somewhere. Did we hear that? Yeah, there we go, Lorenzo. Yeah, it's law. What you do is law. The law said, do this, don't do this, don't do that. Jesus, he comes, let's get the why figured out. So we're going to look at the group, though, that stayed with the Persians, and that would be Esther and the Jews that were back there. God uses both groups, rebuilding Jerusalem, and Esther obviously used for a great purpose here in Persia. At the end of the day, God will accomplish what he wants. He can use you wherever you're at. It's just why you're doing what you're doing is really super duper important. So there are four main characters in the Book of Esther. There's a lot of other characters. We're going to look at the big four. The first one is the Persian king. I'm going to use Xerxes. Last time I was up here, I think I tried to say Xerxes, and I just cannot say that. If anyone knows the proper pronunciation of that, I'm all open for it. So we're just going with Xerxes, because I think that's way easier. Xerxes. And Xerxes, one of the most eye-opening things to me as I've looked at this is Xerxes really wasn't that great of a guy at all. The one of the stories I'm most familiar with is when they do this in Adventures in Odyssey, and he's kind of this happy guy that's there helping everybody out, but he wasn't that way at all. He was grandson of Cyrus the Great, the Cyrus who actually had the Jews coming back to rebuild Jerusalem. But Xerxes himself, being the grandson, it's kind of one of these things. Dad works hard to build the empire, and then the kids all squander it. Okay, that's really where Xerxes was at. He was riding off the coattails of his grandfather, and his big claim to fame historically was trying to take over Greece, of which he failed. And he spent so much resources trying to take over Greece that Greece ultimately becomes the greater power in the long run. Xerxes as well, being an entitled grandchild, spent most of Persia's money trying to build great structures for himself and whatnot. He wasn't a moral man either, and ultimately he's going to get assassinated by one of his sons. So he really got some family problems there. So Xerxes, he was king of Persia during the time of Esther. Mordecai was cousin to Esther, though he was older. We don't know exactly how older, but he was old enough that he took Esther in as basically to his family, raised her as one of his children. He was from the tribe of Benjamin. As I said, due to the age difference, he's able to take Esther in as a guardian. And this is really another example of something that is really tragic, Esther becoming an orphan. I mean, that's a hard thing, right? Kid becomes an orphan. I mean, parents die. We don't actually are told how they died. But God doesn't... It's one of these things I really try to wrap my head around. God doesn't make bad things happen, but he sure can let bad things happen and have good things come from them. Because if Mordecai wouldn't have became guardian of Esther and ultimately being able to work with her up to the point she becomes queen and then on, that was how the Jews were delivered. Sorry, I'm spoiling the end of the book if you've been there. But God took something really bad, Esther becoming an orphan, and ultimately saves the nation of Israel. Mordecai is definitely a part of that. And he's a humble man that God is able to use for his purposes. And he also, one other thing about Mordecai, I wasn't able to figure out exactly how, but he does even throughout the book, he's got some access to the royal court, as he's got a pretty good idea of what's going on with that. Esther, she's the central figure in this. She's cousin to Mordecai, though much younger. Her original name is Hadassah, which most likely meant myrtle, which I don't know if that's myrtle the tree or whatnot. Her name gets changed early on, and mainly to hide her Jewish ancestry. We don't know exactly how long she lived with Mordecai, but it was most likely for some time. Because we see one thing that will really come out of Esther is her character is she's a humble person who will submit herself. She trusts. She trusts in the Lord in the big picture, but she trusts in her cousin, guardian, Mordecai, to make some good choices for her as well. And she submits in her life. Submission and trust are two key traits of Esther, as she's going to be put in some really very, very difficult situations for someone so young. You know, we don't know exactly what age she was married to Xerxes. We got some ideas that we're going to throw around there. But she trusts, and at a young age. And she has to mature quickly. All of a sudden, she's going from being a young whippersnapper to married to then all of a sudden in the king's court and petitioning the king. So a lot of wisdom really quickly gets, a lot of pressure gets put on her, and we see her raising up to the challenge that is there. And as I said, you can guess that her age was probably around being a mid-teen, as Xerxes took her basically as a trophy. She really was a trophy wife, okay? Xerxes had a real wife. You know, we kind of looked at that last time, Vashti, and she gets vanquished, and he gets lonely and says, I need another wife. She's got to look good, you know, because he had his concubines. He had his harem. So we need something. We need a placeholder that we can have up here. Looks good on my arm when I come out for the royal decrees and such. Esther gets ultimately that position. And being the type of person that Xerxes was, he would want someone young and beautiful. Xerxes worked off the flesh. That's really how he was wired. You can see that in everything that he does. Haman's last of the four major characters, and he's the bad guy. You've got the bad guy in the stereo, he's that. He's really enemy of the Jews. You know, we looked the last time that possibly could be due to him being a distant relative of King Agag of the Amalekites that Saul and Israel destroyed some time ago. You know, we can't say 100%, but it sure fits. Whatever the case, he really, really hated the Jews. I mean, he really, really dislikes them. So much for it that he's willing to spend considerable amount of his own money, invest his own energies into having them destroyed. And this really is a great example of what happens when we let sin, bitterness, stuff like that fester in our lives. That'll never turn out any good. I know myself, if I get frustrated or angry about something with work or, you know, whatever it might be, ask yourself, does that ever really put you in a better mood? Do you make better decisions when you're angry? Okay, I think road rage pretty much, you know, can nullify that. Okay, being angry, it never really puts us into a good state of mind. And Haman, you know, we don't really see him happy at all throughout the book of Esther, and it's ultimately going to lead to his destruction. Haman had great wealth and power. Haman looked to those things to save him, to use to accomplish the purpose of wiping out the Jews, and ultimately they fail him, as, you know, physical means will always fail to bring you any sort of true satisfaction inside or anything. So that's kind of a recap of where we are at. Any comments, questions before we start diving forward? All right, Esther 2. We're going to start in verse 8, and we're just going to read four verses, 8 through 11. So Esther, Xerxes made the decree, banished everything, and he Now has a new thing to go out and find all the young ladies, and he wants to find a trophy wife to add to his collection. So in verse 8, so it came about when the command and decree of the king was heard, and many young ladies were gathered to the citadel of Susa, into the custody of Haggai, that Esther was taken to the king's palace, into the custody of Haggai, who was in charge of the women. Now the young lady pleased him and found favor with him, so he quickly provided her with her cosmetics and food, and gave her 7 choice maids from the king's palace, and transferred her in and her maids to the best place in the harem. Esther did not make known her people or her kindred, for Mordecai instructed her that she should not make them known. Every day Mordecai walked back and forth in the temple of the court, in front of the court of the harem to learn how Esther was and how she fared. So Xerxes has rounded up all the young ladies basically to spend a night with him to find a new queen. If you have any doubt into the character of Xerxes, there you go. Okay, did he care at all about these women? No, it's clear he didn't. Okay, not at all. He was in this just for himself. Esther is rounded up in that group as well. We don't know exactly how that happened, but whatever, did they spot her? Did they know about her? Was it part of a census or something? We don't know, but she gets basically caught in that net as well. So she's taken up and put under the place of Haggai's care. Haggai is basically in charge of the harem, of all the ladies. Again, it shows the character of Xerxes. He really doesn't want to be bothered with him unless he wants them in his company. Other than that, Haggai is supposed to take care of that. But the really cool thing we see here is really we start to get a picture into the character of Esther. We see Esther's face shining forth. At this point in Esther's life, most of her control over her life is gone. I mean, how would you like that at 14, 16, whatever years old, and all of a sudden, all of your control is gone? Gals, you know, young teens, you like to go with them all. That's gone. Okay? Really making most of your own choices are shot. like I said, I don't think there's any indication that Esther sought this. She was probably just scooped up by the city administrators when Xerxes made the proclamation. But Esther really stands out here. And I think not only because of her beauty, but also because of her countenance. Countenance is kind of just how you hold yourself when you're around people. You know, you can kind of see. You know, you don't have to be around someone very long to know, oh, that guy's going to be problems. Or, yeah, that guy's, yeah, you understand. Yeah, he's got something. You can see that pretty quickly in people when you're around them. One thing about Esther, you see her faith shining forth right off the bat. She trusts God when things are out of control. In this instance, most things were out of her control, where she lived, what she did, everything. But in each and every situation, as Esther trusts God, God then does something great with Esther. And that's another key thing that you can really glean from the book of Esther. At least I have as I read it. You know, how often do we try to grab control? I don't know, I do a lot. Okay. You know, because especially when things are out of control, what's the first thing you want to do? You want to get control. As human beings, we don't like it when we don't really know what's going on around us. But the thing about control, and I'll just tell you in life, control is really a 100% illusion. 100% an illusion. It'll be revealed later, but you know, one of the Gold's young boy, you know, was hurt by this afternoon, accident out as they were. I forget where they're at. Anyhow, he was hurt pretty bad. Okay. And so in a matter of 30 seconds, he's alive, he's fine, but he's in the hospital. I think more of it will be revealed later. But anyhow, a kid went from, happy-go-lucky 1-year-old to an injured and, heading to the ICR at a hospital, in 30 seconds. It's like, yeah, wow, that changed quickly. And I remember seeing him running up and down the aisles on Sunday. Crazy. But that's control. We think we have control, but boop, stuff like that happens. Okay, you just don't really know. Control really is an illusion. Our life is a bit of vapor. It's here today, gone tomorrow. Anything can be taken from you. Anything that you think you have can be taken. We've just suffered a couple years of, 10% plus inflation. When Karen and I first got married, I would say, okay, we'll budget $600 and that should cover all of our food and fun for the month. I'm not sure it makes it a week. And that's no cut on Karen. This is a fact. Okay? You know, who just thought of eggs? Used to be a buck a dozen. Now they were like $3 or $4 at one time. I don't know where they're at now. It's stupid. It's crazy. But again, did any of you have any control over that? No. No control over it. It just happened. You can't change it. You got to deal with it. Health-wise, can't control that. economy unstable. So what do we really have control over? Is there anything we have control over? What's that? Yourself, right. And even on that, some of your health you don't have total control over. But one thing you do have control over is your faith. Where are you going to put your faith? If you want to know what the big thing running around the government is, you know where they want you to put your faith? In them. They want you to put your faith in the dollar, in the government, in them fixing whatever else is messed up out there. They want that so bad because then they can rip it away from you. So every government's always wanted. Okay. Your faith nearly needs to be in the Lord. Because your faith, where you put your faith, is what you have control over, and that is why they hate it so much. So when it all comes down to it, all you control is your faith, and we need to be careful where we put that faith. Esther is a great example of somebody, from everything we look at in the book, she put her faith 100% in the Lord. There are many beautiful girls in the king's harem. I dare say, I actually guarantee you, you know, and I was trying to figure out how many women were in this beauty pageant contest. Everything I can look up, they're guessing around like 400. And I don't think Xerxes had a different lady every night. He might have spanned it out. I don't really know that. But I almost guarantee you these are the cream of the crop. Because this is a guy who catered to the flesh. He's going to have the best looking ladies possible lined up for him. He didn't care where they came from. As long as they were beautiful young virgins, that's what he wanted. So from a fleshly perspective, they were probably perfect. And Haggai, he's the overseer of them. He's probably seen all the types. And you can imagine what these gals were thinking. Some probably hated it, were drug up there, you know, didn't have a choice. Others, you know, they probably said, hey, this is a chance. I'll be set for life. Money, everything, I'm good if I can just, you know, deal with this. I worked once, has anyone heard of Simplot? Okay, so I actually worked on Don Simplot's house. He's the son of J.R. Simplot, and he was about 60 years old. We were working on his house, and he had a wife, and we called her Jessica Rabbit, because she reminded us, if you've seen Who Framed Roger Rabbit, because she, I kid you not, she was probably 25 years old, and she was a very beautiful lady. But when you see a 25-year-old hanging off the arm of a 60-year-old, it's like, figure that one out, okay? So here in this court of Xerxes, there's probably some of these ladies that's what they were after. They just wanted to be taken care of. Whatever the case, Esther is in this group as well, and she finds favor with Haggai. And due to this, she gets some special perks with the harem. So that's the first place that we see. Haggai, he's seen a lot of ladies. Okay, that court, he's seen a lot of them come through. And he was basically in charge of them all. I'm pretty sure he'd seen some pretty entitled gals come through. He'd seen some real pain in the rears come through. And I don't think Haggai, he's like, you're pretty, boop-de-doo. Not really that big of a deal. Whatever Haggai saw in Esther, it was more. It was in her character. Esther didn't seek this, but due to how she handled herself, she stood out, and she ultimately was rewarded for that. And that's really a key point there. If you're looking for the great opportunities, it's like, okay, now I'm going to suck up to the boss. Good luck with that. Because most likely the boss will be watching you when you're not paying attention, and that's really what he's going to make his evaluation on. Okay, trying to pick the right moment to show off will almost always fail you. Okay, with Esther, it was her character. It was how she held herself day in and day out. And you see this a lot in the scriptures. You see a lot of individuals in the scriptures who their character comes out over the long haul. Anybody got any examples? Who had some tough situations, but their character really shone out in the scriptures? What's that? Paul, great one. Yeah. Yeah, Paul had some really hard situations. He wouldn't have just done that for... he wasn't looking to shine in the moment. Otherwise, he would have given up a long time ago. Who else? What's that? Peter's another great one. Joseph. Joseph's a big one that stands out in my mind. Man, can the deck get stacked too much against you? Every time you do something right, it seems like whoosh, back down. You know, but his character was to keep doing the right thing, no matter if he's in jail, no matter if he's whatever. What were you going to say there, Rain?
Yeah,
another great. Yeah, Job. He was like, come on, just give up, curse God and die. That was his wife's advice. So yeah, but this is the difference between character and just trying to appeal for the moment, just trying to basically use the opportunities. God works most in those who have that character and those who will let him. Jump to James chapter 4. James 4:10. Humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord and he will exalt you. Okay. You know, Jesus, he wants to be great, will be least. I mean, it's all over in the scriptures. What does God want? He wants that humble character who wants to do what is right. If you do that consistently throughout your life, God will call you up. You know, this is such a great verse that we made a song out of it. But the world works exactly the opposite. You know, exalt yourself. Make sure you get to the top of that, to the front of the table, wherever it may be. Okay, the world's dog-eat-dog, step on everybody, get yourself to the top. That's really what the world says. No one's going to look out for you but you. God says, hey, drop to the back of the table and wait for the Lord to take care of it. It's different between grabbing control and letting God figure it out through faith. So Esther really, she keeps her ancestry a secret. This is a good idea of what was happening. I believe she just admitted rather than lied. I doubt if they actually asked Esther, you know, what's your heritage, that she lied. She just, you know, they changed her name, and Xerxes, did he really care where she was from? That had nothing to do with the interview process, was her heritage. He cared about what they looked like, what he was after. So Esther, I think, just went along, not drawing attention to the fact that she was a Jew. Jump back in, Esther. Verse 11 gives us another great picture and it gives a picture into Mordecai. Every day, Mordecai walked back and forth from the court of the harem to learn how Esther was and how she fared. Okay. You know, he made sure to stay in there. Could he really change much of what was going on? No, he probably couldn't. Now, you know, the court of the harem, they're not going to let him in. They're not going to let him do much, but he's going to see, how you doing? He did this because he probably knew that, hey, this is pretty tough on her. Okay, we got a teenager, you know, all of a sudden the court of harem, not knowing what's going to happen, but he has that interest in there. From this, we can gather that he most likely was some type of official in the kingdom, and that he had access to things that were going on in the kingdom, in the palace. And this really is, again, if you take away anything, it's a great picture of how the providential hand of God worked. We're not going to see any miracles in Esther. No raising of the dead, no splitting of the waters, nothing like that. But you easily can see God's hand working here. Mordecai's position allows him to check on Esther and encourage her and see how she was doing, which I'm sure she needed, especially as this thing starts out. We'll get there eventually, but if most of you know how this whole story plays out in Esther, could the book of Esther have happened without Mordecai? No. Mordecai was key. Couldn't have happened out with Esther either. So we needed them both really in there for this to happen. Mordecai was a key piece in things that happened in the book of Esther. And really, his position was as well. But as Mordecai is going through this, did Mordecai know at this point in the story that he was pivotal into the deliverance of the Jews? No, he didn't. He didn't know. He wasn't doing this so the Jews could be delivered someday. He's doing this because I care about Esther. Okay, that was his motivation. God can do amazing things when we have that mindset. Mordecai was just faithful in what was in front of him. Jump over to Colossians 3. Colossians Colossians 3, 22 through 24. Slaves, in all things, obey those who are masters on earth, not with external service as those who merely please men, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, do you work heartily as for the Lord rather than for men, knowing that from man you will receive the reward of inheritance as Lord Jesus Christ whom you serve. So, that's great encouragement. The motive. Get anything out of the book of Esther with the motive. Why are we doing what we're doing? Mordecai was doing what he was doing because he loved Esther. Okay, Esther was doing what she did because, well, she trusted God to work this whole thing out. Okay, whatever we do, we need to do it because we trust the Lord. Trusting in the Lord, doing things heartily for the Lord, isn't always easy. Has anyone ever had a job with a really crummy boss? Okay, we've all been out there, probably had that. I can know at least a couple instances where I wasn't too thrilled with the guy I worked for. Okay, you know, but at that moment, ask yourself, why am I here? I'm not really here to work for, I am here to work for this guy. I'm going to give him the best I can, but ultimately it's the Lord Jesus who I'm going to please. Lorenzo.
I like that you brought up, I know you already made this point, but I think it definitely is worth reiterating. I like that you brought up Colossians 3 because it's talking to slaves. And, I mean, I guess an employer is in a way kind of like that too. But, you know, think about being a slave, and I think back to Jesus and the people as they're interacting with him. Jesus didn't come and tell them how to handle all these physical problems, how to break free from the bonds of their government, X, Y, and Z. You know, he didn't come to do those types of things. He always, you know, oh, what's that coin? That coin has Caesar on it, and then give to Caesar what is Caesar's. It was always about, you know, our character, and I really like that you've been driving that home because, you know, I think about the idea of Colossians, and he talks about slaves and being obedient. Esther was definitely a slave. She really didn't have any, like, as you brought this up very well, she didn't have anything going for her. So I just think that's a great point. Really, in my mind, how do I handle things that are completely out of my control? And it's not even deserving. It's not like it's somebody who committed a crime and they're put in prison now. It would seem like God is being unjust, but we know that ultimately God is working through that. So that's a great point.
Yeah, that's a... Yeah, no, that's a... It's a great thing. And even as we look at the book at Esther, I like how you brought that out. You know, she, her situation, she's, yeah. How much control is she really going to have over her life? Yeah, not really. So, and it's not easy to have that great attitude when you're in those situations. And I think the only way you can do it is to say, I'm doing this for the Lord. I don't care what you think, boss. If you don't want to treat me well, that's fine. But yeah. Yeah, motive is everything. It really is. So, can you still hear? This thing seems too low. Yeah, I think it's working. Let me know if it's not working. So, yeah, we really, ultimately, our boss is the Lord. And that's what we need to keep in mindset. Mordecai has the right attitude and is able to be used by God. On the flip side, if Mordecai had a bad attitude, God would have been a little tougher for God to use him. Same way, maybe you're at your crummy job with your crummy boss, not because of the paycheck, but because of the guy standing next to you. If you have a bad attitude, do you think you're going to reach him? Probably not. So, yeah. Mordecai is also very others-focused, in contrast to Xerxes, who is very self-focused. Which one had the money and the power? Clearly Xerxes. Which one had peace with himself and God? Clearly Mordecai. And we have to ask ourselves, which one are we? Yeah. That internal peace, man, you cannot put a price tag on that. You just see people in the world just constantly trying to find peace with stuff. And it doesn't ever work. Peace really only comes from the Lord, and that may, or many times may not come with any sort of cash. Well, let's continue on back to the book of Esther. Let's read verses 12 through 14. Now when the turn of each young lady came to go into King Xerxes, after the end of her 12 months under the regulation for the women, for the days of their beautification were completed as follows: 6 months with oil and myrrh, 6 months with spices and cosmetics for women. The young lady would go into the king in this way. Anything she desired was given her to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. In the evening, she would go in, and in the morning she would return to the second harem, to the custody of Shazgaz, the king's eunuch who was in charge of the concubines. She would not again go to the king unless the king was delighted in her and she was summoned by name. So this lays the process out. Each young woman was to go through 12 months of preparation. 12 months. Is that crazy or what? I don't know. I thought of this and I thought, well, you know, when Karen might take a little long getting ready to go to a movie or something, it's not 12 months, so it's okay. Guys, we can definitely wait. We don't have to wait 12 months. After all of this prep time that these ladies were to have, the women would go and spend one night with the king. I got to say, all in all, this is a very twisted process. I mean, it is just crazy, at least from the woman's perspective. Because at that point, she's part of the harem. She doesn't have a chance to do anything with her life. I'm sure they were well cared for, but any hope of marriage or family was totally shot. This was clearly a physical thing meant to find most satisfying woman for the king. So this is just a bizarre, twisted process. Could God use this for his purpose? He does. You know, this is just totally, just very twisted process that the king is using to find his trophy wife. God is going to use to deliver the Jews. See, God doesn't control people. This is one of these things. I still don't have my head totally around. But he can use our choices, even those by pagan twisted kings, to accomplish his objectives and his purposes. You look at the craziness in the world around us. Is God using all of this? Yeah. I can't tell you how, because I'm just like Mordecai in the middle of the story right now. But God can use it. Even the goofy craziness going on around us. That is what faith is. And Mordecai and Esther are going to be good examples of faith. This process was used by Xerxes to get a trophy wife for his kingdom. God used this process to bring about the deliverance of the Jews. No matter what man does, he's not going to be able to outsmart God. God will always get his purpose accomplished, no matter what is happening down here on planet Earth. And that's where faith comes in. And hopefully that's a comforting thing, because the world looks really weird a lot of the time. I'd say most of the time. It's crazy. It just requires our faith to let things play out and not try to grab the wheel of control and try to do things ourselves. And really ask yourselves, what has that really accomplished before? I know my own life, it's never really accomplished anything good. Let's read verses 15 and 16. When the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his daughter, came to go into the king, she did not request anything except what Haggai, the king's eunuch, who's in charge of the women, advised. Esther found favor in the eyes of all who saw her. So Esther was taken to King Xerxes in the royal palace in the 10th month, which is the month Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. So Esther gets her night with the king. Oh, whoops, wrong part. Esther's turn comes up. Each woman's going to take one thing with them. We have no idea what the other ladies took, but you can imagine it was probably gold or jewelry. So I want to look as pretty as I can for the king. I want to look as flashy as the king, or I want to hold on to this so if the king don't like me, I can hawk it later or something. I don't know. But what does Esther do? She asks Haggai. Clearly, she wasn't in it for what's best for me. She's like, well, this guy knows the king quite well. He probably knows what the king really likes compared to what I like. And so she seeks the advice of others. Haggai had most likely seen many women come and go through the king's harem, so he knows what works and what doesn't work for the king. This follows the trend we see. Esther doesn't assume anything for herself, but trusts others in God to guide her down the slippery path of life. Let's read 17 through 19. The king loved Esther more than all the women, and she found favor and kindness with him more than all the virgins. So he set the royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Then the king gave a great banquet, Esther's banquet, for his princes and servants. He also made a holiday for the provinces and gave gifts according to the king's bounty. When the virgins were gathered together for the second time, then Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. Esther not yet made known her kindred or her people, even as Mordecai had commanded her, for Esther did what Mordecai told her, as she had done when under his care. So Esther got her night with the king, and she ends up finding favor in the king's eyes and is chosen as queen. All is good, right? It's amazing. We can read that in like 3 or 4 verses and like, oh, wow, everything turned out well, right? Well, on one sense, everything did turn out well. God's plan is in full motion. Okay, this was just, we're all leading up. God knows that persecution against the Jews are going to come through, what's his name? Anyhow, you know that persecution is going to rise. He knows there are going to be some challenges there. Did Esther know that this persecution from Haman was going to come and that she would ultimately deliver her people? She didn't. She didn't know at all. All she knows is, now I'm yoked to this 40-year-old dude. That's really all she knew. Okay? And you can say, wow, she's queen. And she's married to a 40-year-old guy who probably, you know, who has a harem. Okay? No matter how much money he had in power, position, whatever, I asked Karen about this. You know, ladies, does it sound like a deal? Would you give up having a family and kids and a loving husband who actually knows your name? Do you give all that up for all that money and power? Most would say no. It's not worth it. Okay. So, in one sense, God put his plan in action. But at this point in Esther's life, things are probably still a little shaky. And she's like, this is not what I wanted, Lord. This is not really how I saw things playing out. Like I said, she married to a man. She was a teen at best. Xerxes was probably in his 40s. And like I said, Xerxes, he had a harem. He was not a one-woman kind of guy. History will definitely tell us that you know, he wasn't. That wasn't how he was wired, but how he was built and what he was used to. And Esther's dream of a happy life, happily ever after, are pretty much shot. Once married to Xerxes, she's not going to be allowed to have her own life. As the book goes on, you know, she can't even have, she will see that she doesn't even have the right to come up and talk to him at any time. You know, can't come up and say, hey, honey, how was your day? In fact, most likely she probably went days, maybe even weeks, without even seeing Xerxes. Because really, it was only when he wanted to summon her for his pleasure. Other than that, and he had a bunch of other ladies that he could summon as well. With Esther, I highly doubt marrying Xerxes was Esther's dream. I doubt her wedding night was what she wanted. She's called in, knows she's going to be with this 40-year-old guy, and that's about it. You know, probably not what she imagined. The pressure of not knowing where the day may lead was probably pretty intense. But this was Esther's life at the moment. What got her through all this? Faith. That's the only thing that will get you through something like that, is faith. And I bring this out to really show Esther's faith. In the rearview mirror, we see an orphan that gets elevated to queen and ends up saving her people. But as you're going throughout that process, it was probably a very rocky road. We're not really even told how much time went in between when she was pulled in to when she became queen to when she delivered the people, delivered the Jews. We don't know where that happened, where that actually, how that played out in the timeline. The process, no matter how you look at it, as you're going through it, was rocky. But isn't this really how God works? You can look at the greats of the Old Testament. Joseph, even David had some pretty rocky days. You know, the scripture says, all who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. You want to shine for Christ? You're going to take your hits. It's going to happen. That's just how it works. And who knows how persecution will arise. It could be your health, you know, various people dealing with that. It could be family, it could be friends, it could be economic. A whole host of other ways we are challenged. It could be your life. Okay, you know, persecution basically hits those who are faithful. But that's really the key to getting through it is faith. That's how Esther got through it, was her faith. Esther had lived a faithful life up to this point, and it didn't change once she got married to Xerxes. She just keeps doing what she is doing. And this is super consistent in the Bible. Like we talked about earlier, you know, Moses, Joseph, Paul, Peter, all those that were brought out, they were faithful people. So when the persecution and the tough times hit, hey, they just kept doing what they're doing. They didn't change anything. And this is super consistent in the Bible. If we aren't living faithfully now, reading your Bible, assembly, living out the spiritual precepts in them, what makes you think that you're going to flip a switch and turn it on later? Okay, that's not how it works. If you really want to know who somebody is, put a bunch of pressure on them. You'll never really hear who the real person is. It comes right out quickly. Okay? The real me is what comes out under pressure. Esther was put in some super tough situations. And it was then that her real character really comes through. And when that real character really comes through, that allows her to really make an impact for God. And to not only make an impact for God, to literally change the course of history, to actually go in and intercede. And God can only use her at those times. Challenges are going to come in this life. Okay, various people in this assembly are dealing with him now. Will Serrano, he's in his final week of radiation. And it tore him up. Okay, there are others. Thankfully, Will only has 1 week left. You know, I know some of you were there, but I do remember going to Avery Jacobs' funeral. That was a hard thing. I remember getting in the car and driving as we were about ready to drive off. And I remember seeing Nick and Jill. And I was like, we get to leave and you know, this will drop into our background. They're still not over. You can't get over the death of a child. It's impossible. Okay, that was probably months, years of a lot of anguish. Okay, because you know that's trial you deal with. Okay, when I had my stroke, it was a bump. It takes a while to get through that stuff. So you know, challenges. What I'm driving at is challenges in this life are going to come. They are tough. This life is tough. There's only one thing that will get you through the tough in this life is faith. It really is. And you can't turn that faith on in a moment. Esther didn't turn it on in a moment. Mordecai didn't turn it on in a moment. They lived that faith. And all of a sudden, when those challenges come upon them, they rise up to the challenge. And that's what we want to be as well. Esther had no guarantees this would all work out, at least not at this point in the stories. But she's a great example of what God can do through a person of faith, you know, when they're put in those tough situations. To close, let's jump over to Romans 8:28. Romans 8:28, and we know that God causes all things to work together for those who love him, who love God, and those who are called according to his purpose. You read this verse, and a lot of times it's like, okay, things are going to be great. That's not actually what this verse says at all. It says it's going to work out for good. For whose good? Yours? God's. It's going to be God's good. Okay, and that might be, I don't know, that might be your persecution, might be your death, might be your health, might be your finances, could be anything. You know, because you're called, work out for his good, because you're called for his purpose. Esther was called for his purpose, and it worked out for God's good, the deliverance of his people. But Esther's going to have a pretty rocky road as she goes down it. God has a purpose. He always has had, he had a purpose back then. He's got a purpose now. And Esther and Mordecai were intricate pieces in delivering the deliverance of the Jews, which was God's purpose at that moment. And the key thing as we go through the book of Esther is just keep in mind, did they know at the moment? Were they aware at the moment what's going on around them? No, they didn't. They had no idea what's going around. The messenger was like, wow, I'm on the wheelless bus with no steering wheel, and I don't know where this is going to end up. But she did know she's gonna stay on there for the Lord. She's going to have that faith in the Lord, and that really, really shines out. It's a great example of that. They just did what they had been doing their whole lives, being faithful servants of the Lord. Questions, comments? Mr. Schaefer, thanks a lot.